My name is Cheryl Lay, and this is our concluding session and the discussion of the Human Genome Initiative, a project which I'll be talking about in a moment. By way of introduction, I'm a professor of chemistry at Capital University, where I'm also director of the core curriculum. And today I put another hat on, and that is I come to you as a representative of the steering committee of the ELCA Workgroup on Science and Technology. So there is a grassroots group who are loosely connected with the church that are interested in issues of science and technology, that's trying to keep these issues alive and well within discussions of the church institution. So there is a small group of us who are interested in these kinds of things, interested in seeing the church addressing them. So what I have here is a little handout about the statement of purpose of this group, and if you'd like to take one, I'd offer it to you. If you're not interested, perhaps somebody in your congregation is interested, so you might want to take it back with you.
What's ELCA?
The Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. And I should say, if you're unfamiliar with the ELCA, there are several other church bodies who do have, again, these types of grassroots organizations who try to keep the issues of science and technology alive in the church. So the Methodists, the Presbyterians, the Episcopals, the United Church of Christ, those are the groups that I'm most familiar with working within the church. And quite nicely, all of these groups get together one time a year in October to talk about issues of science and technology as they relate to the church. So there is a small number of people in the United States who care deeply about the intersection between science and technology and the church. The focus of our thoughts today and our conversations together is, by the title I hope you could tell, what I'm looking at is what's the church's role in discussions of genetics? The title Whole New World, of course you know, is the theme at Holden Village this summer, and I take that whole to mean as not half, as whole. So if we're looking for a whole new world, certainly the church has a part to play in that wholeness. And then I chose as the other opposite end of that Brave New World, that refers to a novel describing a society which chooses to use genetics and things go awry, I guess. So we have this continuum of a whole new world on the one hand, and this on the other end of the scale we have futuristics of societies perhaps where genetic engineering gets abused. Let me just say a word about why the church should be involved in a project like this. I think often we forget that science is an enterprise that operates within society. Often science is considered to be something outside of society, but science is an enterprise that operates within society. Society means people. Science means people. And so I think anytime we're dealing with people, and certainly when we're dealing with people in a situation where there's the possibility of a profound impact, and genetics really has that potential to profoundly impact our world, I think the church really has a responsibility to be a part of that, part of the society that's grappling with questions. For those of you who haven't been part of the ongoing discussions, let me just say a word about the Human Genome Initiative, although maybe I should point to someone who's been in the discussion and get them to teach you about the Human Genome Initiative. The Human Genome Initiative is a federally funded big biology project. The government has slated $3 billion over the next 15 years to do what's called sequence the human DNA. Essentially, that means to know everything you could possibly know about human DNA. And the ultimate goal, of course, is to be able to then do gene therapy. Because as you remember, DNA, part of your DNA, 2 to 10% of your DNA is genes. So that's the project. $3 billion over the next 15 years. Because it's federally funded, of course, that means that your tax dollars are going to support it. Right? So I think you really have a direct connection to the project, even though we don't feel those connections. No one asked you personally if it was okay if we spent your tax dollars that way, but you all do have a connection. We've been talking over the week about a number of issues that this project raises. So what I'd like to do is just summarize those issues. So on the one hand, we could look at the issues again. On the other hand, we could ask questions about where should the church become involved in conversation about these issues? What should the role of the church be? And we could break the church down into what we mean by that. And then maybe we can bring church on the one hand and issues on the other hand and maybe we can see places where we can get some conversation, some action going. So that's really the goal for today, is to have all of us do some problem solving about how these two, EHDI and the church, ought to come together. I will also share with you some thoughts of some of the other church groups who have been really working on this furiously. I should say that the ELCA group this has not been a primary focus. All right. Okay. As we go through these issues, if you've thought of more since our discussions or if I've left some off the list, please call them to my attention. And as before, if you have any questions or comments, any thoughts that come to mind as we go through this, please don't hesitate to share them with the group, because you all have been thinking interesting things. Yes?
I want to ask, if you said 2 to 10% is of our genes, our DNA, our genes,
right.
What's the rest?
Right. This is a very interesting question. Scientists really don't know. Believe it or not, there are things that science still does not know about.
You mean all those helixes, those only 2 to 10% that they can identify as having to do with genes?
Right, right. Probably some of it goes as following. Remember, every single cell that you have has the same piece of DNA. And clearly you've got some cells that are different than other cells. So your brain cells, for example, are not anything like your big toe cells. So you've got to have some kind of regulation. Your brain genes have to be on up here, and your big toe genes have to be off. And down there, the brain genes have to be off, and the big toe genes have to be on. So there's got to be some kind of information for this regulation encoded in that 98%.
But they don't know that that's true. That's what it is.
Right. Okay. And they don't know how it works. There was a theory about 15 years ago that some of that 98% was just garbage DNA. That is, as an organism evolves, it picks up this extra DNA and it just carries it along with it because it offers the organism a place for mutation and therefore evolution to occur. So some of it perhaps is just potential genes. All right, so we don't really know. Good question. Any other questions or comments about things you've been thinking about related to the HDI?
Seems like you could say the same thing about brain tissue.
What's that?
That we're only using a small percentage of it, and we really don't know whether the rest is involved in replacement or a makeover.
So maybe that's a theme about living organisms, that, or maybe that's a theme about science, that
we're designed to survive.
Yeah. Right. We try to impose patterns, and just because we don't know what it is doesn't mean it's not doing anything. I mean, it could very well be playing a very important function, but if we don't know what it is, it still doesn't. All right, some of the things that we've been talking about over the last week in terms of what kind of issues this project raises for society in the future is, for example, the first one, and this is probably the place where this project is going to have the most immediate impact. That is, as the DNA is sequenced, it's going to be more and more easy to develop screens for certain genes. We've talked in the past about the 4,000 genetic disorders that have been characterized. So potentially there could at least be 4,000 tests for genetic diseases that we know about. This doesn't include things like hair color or sex selection or any of those kinds of things as well. So at the moment, gene screening is focused on just these genetic diseases, cystic fibrosis, Tay-Sachs, sickle cell anemia, Marfan syndrome, which Abraham Lincoln had. This is hot news that Abraham Lincoln had a disorder called Marfan syndrome. Huntington's disease, there are 4,000 of them, right? So there are a number of characterized genetic disorders. And the most immediate impact of HDI then would be to provide these genetic tests. And so probably the most immediate effect after that, if you have a genetic, you're pregnant, you have a genetic test, the test comes out that your fetus, your developing child, carries a genetic disorder, there's the feeling that most in society would then choose to abort. So this is going to have really tremendous impact. That's the feeling. What do you all think about that? You think the press reports that, or many people report that this desire to get rid of that defective fetus, it's going to become so great that abortions will be much more prevalent. Does that make sense to you?
Apparently our tests, which tests genetic makeup the way it is now.
Right.
Maybe it'll be a little bit more, but I think if that's the case, people will rush it the way it is.
Right. Dean has a very good point, and that is this is already a very real happening here. We're not talking about the future. That is, there are already some disorders, approximately 200, I believe, that can be tested for already. But, you know, if there are 4,000 tests, then I suppose that raises the chance. Yeah.
Well, I think about, you know, in terms of genetics, that things evolve for a reason, things happen for a reason. We have Down syndrome for some reason. Autism, they thought they couldn't connect with them, and then they found out, oh my God, they're really brilliant people inside. So there is a reason that, and it's spooky to think of human beings thinking they have a reason.
Right, right. Or as you and I were talking the other day, what would happen if Abraham Lincoln's mother had decided to abort him because he had Marfan syndrome?
What is that?
That syndrome is a degenerative muscle disorder, and so the heart muscle and also your eye muscles are very weak. It's common among, one of the features of the disorder is the person becomes very tall and has very long skinny fingers. So many basketball players have been identified as having this trait, and there were, apparently was a woman basketball player on the Olympic team who died and she was playing basketball and she had a weak heart.
How do you spell that?
M-A-R-F-A-N, Marfan.
Okay.
Is it life-threatening? Is it on the same league with cystic fibrosis?
Well, it is if you're playing basketball. I mean, if you're doing activities. Yeah. Anything that affects your heart.
Well, it's the same idea that in this culture, we want people young and beautiful. You know, that's what we would do. If somebody was in charge, they'd select for young, beautiful people.
Right, right, exactly. I think that gets down to maybe question number four there. Questions of human identity and self-worth. What is it to be normal? You know, what is it to be healthy? What is it to be a desirable human being? Right? Is it that we only want young, blonde-haired, blue-eyed boys? Okay.
In a way, I'm kind of surprised the government is funding that if one of their primary thing would be to do abortions, because I think the government's stance is that we don't want abortion.
Right, right. It is a little puzzling to many in the scientific community. I think maybe it's a big secret, I don't know. I don't know.
Some of it also, I mean, recently they thought they found the marker for the asthma gene.
Uh-huh.
I mean, some of that may come in the gene therapy of currently living human beings.
Right.
Which is not necessarily perfect.
Right.
There are other reasons to do this.
Right. Definitely. Nita's talking about the point number two is the idea of gene therapy. At the moment, of course, the goal of gene therapy is to be able to provide a cure for those 4,000 genetic diseases. Right. However, once you know how to do that, what's going to prevent you from tinkering with other kinds of genes? All right. And so then we have two kinds of gene therapy that can arise. You can do gene therapy on somatic cells, that is, all your cells that aren't involved in reproduction, and so your genes would change just for you. All right. However, let's say you're carrying a genetic disorder that's not life-threatening, and you may want to ask the question, well, do you want to pass this down to your children? If the answer would be no there, then you'd have to do what's called germline therapy and make sure that in all cells of the developing embryo, they would carry a replaced good copy of the gene. All right. So there is, some people think that a very good place to draw a line in gene therapy is this between the somatic and the gene and the germline therapy. That it's okay to change the gene for someone who's living now, but we don't want to mess with future generations. Right. However, other people say that that line is pretty fuzzy. Once you can do it for somatic cells, right, the germ cells operate the same way. So it won't be too hard to move from somatic cells to germ cells. So on the one hand, people say, it's a very clear distinction. On the other hand, people say, if you can do it in one, you can do it in the other easily. So I think that raises
some serious concern. And of course, number three, of course, now we're getting down into the more ugly possibilities. I remember we said gene therapy was primarily to think about changing genes for genetic disorders. What about eugenics? That is, once we can change the gene for genetic disorders, let's all have brown hair, blonde hair and blue eyes, and do some maybe positive eugenics. Or on the other hand, perhaps we can also do negative eugenics as well. That is, let's take out bad traits. So we can put in or take out. I think this is a rather serious concern, and for many people, for many of many scientists in the scientific community, it raises the specter of Nazi Germany, because as you know, the Nazis had a eugenic program.
There's one interesting point there that comes to mind is if you get in plant breeding, when you work with crossing plants over way back in Burbank and Mendel, where you cross the pea plants and observe the colors, there's a lot of trade-offs. In other words, you sometimes gain this one thing that you think is so great, and you lose sometimes some of the other things. My field happens to be agronomy, and some of these things they've gone after, and great big programs to get this one trait. And lo and behold, they find out that they've lost some other stuff.
Absolutely.
And it was unpredictable.
Right. That reminds me of a story in the animal world where they're, of course, you know, they're doing genetic engineering on animals as we speak. And that reminds me of the story of the genetic engineering to make the pigs fatter. Mm-hmm. So they put the gene in to make the bigger pigs. But what they found out was those pigs became more irritable. And because they were more irritable, they didn't eat as much.
You get all sorts of pigs be worse.
Yeah, and generally, very often in this type of research, when you put in that new gene, what you look for in the end is to see if the new gene worked. You don't look for things that you're not looking for. That is, they weren't looking to see if the pigs were going to become more irritable.
I was just reading in the Scientific American today, they're slipping spider-producing silk genes, and they're not doing it right, but they're in the process, because they want to mass-produce the silk, because it's so wonderful, lightweight, strong.
Yeah.
So they want to slip those genes into yeast, so they can mass produce the silk.
Right, right. That would be biotechnology there. Right. So,
use all the research money to do that.
There's an allocation of resources at issue as well. Yeah.
In some sense, doing gene work in yeast or E. coli, to me, seems like a very different issue than in plant lines or animal lines. Because that's commonly where a lot of the drug gene work is going on also, producing hard-to-make drugs by organic chemicals.
Right, right.
Which, you drop it while the yeast, generally it's not 37 degrees that's going to die.
Right.
A lot of different issues in talking about yeast. And
right. In that case, that's from the world of biotechnology, from industry, where Dean would like to argue that yeast died. You're bringing that point. Thank you. So, I think that's an issue within the research itself. On the one hand, we've got lots of rats giving their lives for this research, depending on how strongly you feel about these things. Rats, pigs, dogs, all kinds of animals are going towards this research. And on the other end of the scale, of course, we can talk about, how do you feel about bacteria being genetically engineered?
No, they're affecting monkeys with AIDS.
Monkeys for all kinds of animals. So that's another issue. I think these are issues. These two, we've had allocation of resources and the kind of the use of organisms, I think, are research issues that go along really with any kind of biological research, not necessarily. What else? We can move on. I think we've touched on many of these already in our discussions. Number five, what about the question of human equality as the ability to change genes occurs. Are we going to try to make everyone the same, or are we going to try to make a class of worker people and a class of boss people?
Drones. Drones and workers.
Right, right. So, and these start to get to be a lot more tricky, I think. A lot more tricky issues. We've also talked about issues of access to and use of genetic knowledge. Apparently 20% of companies in the United States now are genetically screening their employees as a way of trying to keep their health care costs down. All right.
That's really happening right now.
Yes. It's 20%.
I guess it's legal.
I guess.
How do you do genetic screening? I mean, the simplest form like that.
I would imagine it would probably be blood, yeah.
Without our knowledge?
So the issues here with genetic screening would be the same issues that arise, for example, in drug testing. So companies that are doing drug testing, there are all kinds of issues there. It would be the same kinds of issues, I think, with genetic screening.
What companies are
being used now? All I know are about 20% of the companies in the United States. Must be large companies.
See, I just can't believe that's legal. I would like to see companies that did that.
Drug testing, right? Drug testing is legal.
That's the thing, though. That's safety and health for the company.
I think the insurance companies are just putting that type of pressure on it. And insurance cost is so high that in order to insure a large corporation, I imagine they are getting some pressure. I don't know whether it's legal, and I must be if it's occurring, but just the cost of health care is so high these days.
Do you know what they do? I mean, what the actual process is?
No. I would imagine it's through the blood.
And so then the person might be insured for everything but whatever the disease, whatever the genes show.
It's more economically.
You know, under the new Americans with Disabilities Act, it seems like it says that you cannot discriminate based on a disability unless it would affect your ability to manufacture and make money, unless it affects your business. And genetic disease, I would think, would be a disability as much as a crippling.
Right,
but they're not hiring them. The insurance companies just will put a rider on their insurance that says, we'll insure you for cold and doctor visits, but we won't insure you for some fibrosis.
Politically, that reminds me of something that's happened in the timber field. Is people have appealed timber sales. They had the right to do that several times. Well, and a lot of environmental people are doing it. So the government said, we don't think we want you to do that again. So now you can't appeal. They just made the new law. You know, so it's like the companies or whatever, they put a rider on there. We don't want you. You know, it's like, it's just easy as that. So it doesn't matter what the status quo political stuff is, it just changes.
Well, and then I put number seven, the last one we've talked about a little bit, and that is the scientific community is saying to the public, the pursuit of knowledge is the highest goal, the highest good. And so therefore, this shouldn't be stopped. Right, and I think that's definitely an issue that we need to think about. Any other issues you've been thinking about as you've been attending these sessions?
I wanted to ask a question to you about what she just said, right, which was also something I was thinking about after the first class.
Right.
There's bound to be possibilities, at least, of great benefits. Silk from bacteria sounds pretty good.
Right.
Nice stuff. So, do you make that distinction? I mean, the work on human beings and the work on, that would be useful to insurance companies, can you kind of neatly separate these things? I mean, the capability, the technology may be the same, but the application is different.
Yeah.
And wouldn't we all like to wear silk instead of rayon, or whatever?
Yeah. I don't know. Personally, I think the whole business is pretty scary. I'm not
feasible stance to take. politically, is it?
I'm not sure I'm interested in trying to control nature, which is what we're trying to do.
Here we are.
We're doing it now, big time, controlling nature.
Yeah, the air in this room.
Well, there's that, and then through animal and plant. I mean, our forests are identical, copy, hybridized Douglas fir.
I don't have any problem with kind of natural breeding, genetic breeding that happens in the animal world. But I do have some serious questions about what's going to happen to the diversity of plant animal life that we have on this planet if we start doing tinkering of the DNA in a big way.
Well,
we're going to lose diversity.
Well, they messed around with germ warfare. That made a mess. It's like, how do you control it after it gets going crazy?
What about other people? How do you all feel about it? Don't just ask me about how I feel about it.
I think there's a big distinction, too, between gaining the knowledge and using the technology.
Uh-huh.
And that's where our responsibility comes in. I would hate to see basic research stopped, because who knows what we're missing. But we need to be responsible about it to the point where we can then majority rule affect what happens.
Research is funded by the use of knowledge after we get it, right? Mm-hmm. So people, all the federal government's money, but there's also probably lots
companies.
Of private companies
uh-huh.
that as soon as they come up with something, they're going to be ready to market. They just came out with this tomato thing where they have genetically altered tomatoes that will grow bigger or whatever. And to me, that's just like, if our whole lifestyle is like, if we farm the right way, we wouldn't need to make these tomatoes any bigger. And it's almost kind of like the way in which we made the bigger tomatoes is the way that caused us to have to make bigger tomatoes.
I don't think it's actually bigger tomatoes. I think it's stay fresh longer, so they can make it over this 200,000-mile journey they have to go through.
Which has been going on for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 10,000 years since the beginning of it.
You're talking about natural progress and changing in.
Yeah, now this is an opportunity to manipulate.
Right.
Yeah, but it seems like the rate of that manipulation has never yielded. That I guess I can't even harbor hope that you could stop the rate of manipulation of new tools being used as fast as they can be produced, and that I don't. It seems to me that even using the old tools, that the manipulation has gone beyond the bounds of the ecosphere to handle it. So I guess it seems like you want to have input into the worst kind, into the eugenics, and input into the insurance issues and so many human related issues, and yet getting silk from bacteria still appeals to me. That's a great one.
I think it's great we have seedless grapes, that dried seedless grapes. Seriously, I was with my kids in London, and my kids knew that they were grapes, that seeds were in grapes. You know, we bought some of them sick the other day, and I thought, oh gosh, seeds and grapes. And they're like, what? Seeds don't have grapes. Yes, they do. I'm waiting for the watermelon, seedless watermelon to be grapes.
They're there.
Do they have? And so, I'm not kidding now. Some of these things I think are great. I was reading an article, I think it was National Geographic, where it talked about how even 150 years back, there were so many more different types of corn, maize, whatever, and gourds and tomatoes and different types of things that have now just disappeared because we've gone for the sturdier tomatoes that can be packed and that can last longer.
I'm not a worker and plant breeder, but I've observed, being an agronomist, what's gone on, and I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, there was a tremendous amount of money put into, you're going to remake the corn plants and alfalfa plants and everything, and then market these. And what they found out so far is that they've had to back off an awful lot. In other words, some of these companies, the roles, you get into genetic engineering and hired the people that knew how to do that. They have gone from maybe, let's say, the company, I think I heard one that had 20 or 30 PhDs working, and the balance of the people, if they have a company, you know, it's going right back to plant breeders. You know, in other words, these were the guys that really knew what plant breeding was all about. And they were the same type of people that removed the beers off the barley, the pawns, and you name it, all of these other good things.
Through the breeding.
Yeah, plant breeding. And so I think some people have backed off and said that it's quite a bit of pie in the sky when you strike out for these things that are way out there. It's not that it's bad, but it's just that the expectation of getting there and coming up with this. And then if it really is and this is a personal thing, the money that's cost put into this, they have the one going now on, I don't know if you're voting growth hormone for dairy cattle, and that's really raising a fuss in a lot of places. And big companies put a lot of money into that. And essentially what it'll do, a lot of people feel, is that if it comes on stream and everybody allows it to go, it's just going to make farmers, the dairy farmer, just have more cows, and he'll be forced, to go from 40, 50 cows up to 100 cows to compete with the other guy who's going to raise 100 cows, and they'll have to buy this product today. And so I'm kind of against that. But it's maybe coming. It's going to come. And the thing is,
it seems like it gets down to a real